to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome, my friends, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, sitting next to Keith Alexander, who is co-hosting with me tonight during our first hour, as he always does. It's Saturday evening, July the 9th. It is hot. It's miserable in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. If I complained about the heat and humidity every week for the entire show, it still wouldn't adequately reflect my disdain for this merciless climate. But it's all nice and cool here at AM 1380 WLRM Studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, as we broadcast to you tonight, and also going out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. And I'll tell you another thing, and Keith can vouch for me on this. You know, here at WLRM, I want to explain, since we moved to the new station here downtown from Millington, I guess it was about a year ago, it's a little bit different. Most people, when they think of a radio station, they think of a single studio, and all of the talent, you know, produces and broadcasts their show from a single studio inside the station. Well, that's not how it works here at WLRM. There is a long hallway you get into after you pass through the lobby, and there's three different studios here. And we've got a studio all to ourselves. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, despite the fact that we only broadcast once a week for 3 hours on Saturday nights, we have a studio all to ourselves, the Political Cesspool Studio at 1380. No one wants to bunk with us. And so, you know, after lamenting, you know, how messy it was here in the studio, we have cleaned it up. We've cleaned it up. I came in here yesterday and spent the majority of the afternoon decorating the Political Cesspool Studio. We're going to have to do a video from in here. Keith, explain to them how I have adorned the walls here in our, you know, confines here.
Well, it's basically a celebration of James, you know, as you might expect. We've got James's marriage license, James's wedding, James's honeymoon, and then James basically kissing up to Frankie Valli, the Four Seasons, and various other 50s and 60s musical groups that he likes. Then memorabilia from his time with the Tennessee Reform Party and working in the Pat Buchanan for President campaign back in about, what is that, 2000? Yeah, the year 2000. Then we finally get into the political cesspool phase of his life, which is still going on. Of course, he's got pictures of his baby, pictures of his family, pictures of, he's got framed, you know, mementos like being given the Dixie Defender Award from the Sons of Confederate Veterans, getting a proclamation of honorary city councilman from the city of Memphis, and then the Memphis City Council certificate of recognition of the political cesspool and appreciation of its outstanding contribution to the community. Now, that's something that will definitely make the SPLC and all the rest of the far left gag. They're probably rolling on the floor, writhing like they've been given arsenic or something right now when they hear this. But, you know, that's all been, you know, when the left can't poison the well, it really frustrates them. And James, when he comes across, you know, meets, let's say, an average city councilman or something like this, they immediately connect, just like he does with the audience, just like he does with lots of, you know, level-headed Americans all over the place. But the left wants to portray him as if he's Count Dracula and Frankenstein's monster all rolled up into one. But we've got the certificates to prove that that's not everybody's opinion. Right, James?
Well, that's absolutely right. And I tell you, I don't know why I didn't do this sooner, because now I don't want to go back home. I could live in this office now. You know, I always enjoyed coming to work every Saturday night, but now I've got it all. We've got a little Rock and Roll Hall of Fame shrine here. We got autographed pictures sent to the show from Ray Stevens, Gary Puckett, Davy Jones, Neil Sedaka, the Buckinghams, the Grassroots, Johnny Rivers. They're all here. Of course, even little Anthony in the Imperials. And I tell, as Keith said, if I could sell each Frankie Valli autograph that I have for $100, I would never have to work again. I could retire to tomorrow. And there we got a few of those on display. A chronological picture timeline of my evolution from, you know, young apprentice of Pat Buchanan all the way to, you know, radio show superstar. And I tell you, everybody that I love is on this wall. Yeah, the other hosts here on the show, some of my friends in the movement, family. I love the new studio, and thanks to the management of WLRM for letting them make it my own here.
There's only one rule: no vegetable can cross the threshold into this office. Now, Jen got on to you in an email this week, and I applaud her for doing that about your diet, because, you know, really, it's going to be tough as you get older. But James is like, my favorite quote regarding him and vegetables is from Al Bundy on Married with Children, when Al said, "I'm so hungry I could eat a vegetable." James has never been that hungry, folks.
Every time we go out to eat with someone and I order, Keith makes that remark, you know, to the waitress or whomever. You know, he's never been hungry enough to eat a vegetable. But it's true, and I'm thankful for that. Last thing we added was a nice little scented candle, and we got that burning. I tell you, we might just do a five-hour show tonight. I don't know if they'll let that fly, but it feels good to be here, and I wanted to give you all a little narrative there. And Keith did a damn fine job of kind of breaking down what the studio looks like now. Good job, Keith, on that. You almost painted a verbal picture there.
You can also see the floor now. We actually have carpet down here. I didn't know whether they had carpet or linoleum or what it was. We were ankle deep in debris here for a while, but James decided that enough was enough, and he got put his nose to the grindstone and his shoulder to the wheel, and now we're living in the way that we ought to be living, in a nice, clean, well-appointed studio.
That's absolutely right, and I tell you, now we just got to get this thing. We got to get a television simulcast now, so everybody else could enjoy it. I was a little bit too embarrassed. This studio was made for radio, but now I tell you what, it's a mirror reflection of me, and that's great. With a little bit of Keith, and we got Eddie and Bill and Winston. They're all hanging on the walls here, too. So they all got their little, you know, studio headshots here on the wall. But I guess at some point tonight, Keith, we should quit patting ourselves on the back on how good our broadcast studio looks and actually get down to a little news and commentary and all that good stuff. We only got about 30 seconds at the end of the segment here, opening segment. Want to welcome everyone again to the show. And I promise you, after this forthcoming commercial break, we're going to get down to business. Right, Keith?
That's right.
So stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to the Political Cesspool radio program with James Edwards and Keith Alexander. Got a big show tonight. We're going to be covering a lot of news. Richard Spencer of AlternativeRight.com and the National Policy Institute. If you've been to our website recently, you know why Richard is coming on tonight, promoting a very big conference, and we want you to join us in Washington, D.C., September 9th through the 11th this year. Be with me in Washington. I will be speaking at the National Press Club, and then there will be a conference immediately following that featuring some of your favorite political cesspool guests, Peter Brimelow, Jared Taylor, Sam Dixon, myself, Richard Spencer, and others. All be there. Richard's going to tell you about it a little later on tonight, and then Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be in studio with more. So stay tuned, everybody. We're just getting started.
The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, we're back. Keith Alexander and I are still marveling at the clean studio we have tonight. Keith says it's inspired him to go home and clean his office, so... I tell you, I'm spreading good. Good things are happening tonight. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Getting things started tonight, Keith wanted to answer in a little bit more detail a question he received or a comment he received via email from a listener, I believe, up in Pennsylvania, Keith.
Yeah, let me get into Jen's comments again. Jen made a comment about how Keith Alexander went on his rant about how liberalism, radical egalitarian agenda, and included in it was men are the same as or just as good as women. Now, I don't know if she took offense at that or not, but a lot of women, I'm sure, that listen to this show or just in the general public would. So I want to explain myself in more depth about this. Liberalism is the modern face of evil, in my opinion, which means that liberalism in all of its manifestations is bad, it's poisonous, and you can't ingest it into your worldview without suffering serious negative consequences in your life. If you give a pass to any part of liberalism, then you have ingested the poison. For example, there are a lot of people, a lot of mainstream conservatives, Ann Coulter is one, we're going to discuss her later today, or this evening, who seems to want to give a pass to the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement was good liberalism. Of course, homosexual rights is bad liberalism. Illegal immigration and illegal immigrant rights is bad. The sexual revolution is bad. The drug culture is bad. But then we have these manifestations of liberalism like the feminist movement that some women want to say, oh, well, that's really good, and, you know, that was needed. Now, don't go off on the feminist movement or the civil rights movement. My goodness. You know that black people were mistreated before 1954 in America, and how could any decent person have any opposition whatsoever to the civil rights movement? Well, I'm going to try to explain that. First of all, in regard to Jen's comment about feminism generally, liberalism is radical egalitarianism. And let's just break down the various movements. The civil rights movement, blacks are the same as or just as good as white people. See, that last part kicks in the sympathy, kicks in the sentimentality. Then you had criminal rights under the Warren Court. Criminals are the same as or just as good as law-abiding citizens. You know, people say, how did that get past us? Well, it did. Look at court decisions like Gideon versus Wainwright that provided a free-of-charge lawyer to everybody accused of a serious crime. And now it's filtered down to virtually any crime. You can get a court-appointed public defender. And, of course, these people tend to be committed leftists who spend their lives clogging up the court system and delaying justice. And justice delayed, as liberals are fond of telling us, is justice denied. Then you had, you know, all these death penalty cases. In fact, the death penalty was ruled to be unconstitutional for a time. Then it was reconsidered and brought back. But if a person is convicted of a crime and gets the death penalty, you know that today it's going to be years, probably 30 years, before they actually meet the executioner, and that's because of liberalism. Then we had feminism. Women are the same as or just as good as men. Now, this is what really gets stuck in the craw of a lot of women, but what they need to understand is it's not intended to help you. It is intended to beguile you into supporting it. Women, particularly women in their teens, women in their early 20s, love the idea that they can be not only allowed, but actually now given preference for admission to selective colleges and universities or hard to get into graduate programs like medicine and law. But the experience of mankind shows that, and I can tell you of numerous anecdotal incidents that I have actually witnessed in my life, of some woman that takes up a slot in medical school, gets out, marries another doctor, practices medicine for a few years, and then decides, you know, this isn't really where it's at. She basically retires, doesn't use her medical degree, and becomes a full-time mother and housewife. Or she goes into some other field for which she didn't need to go to medical school and take up a valuable slot in a zero-sum game. Likewise, I know of numerous women that have taken up slots. For example, I know of one here in Memphis that took up a slot at Harvard Law School. Talk about hard to come by. She practiced law with a silk stocking law firm in Memphis for about 6 years, then decided that practicing law wasn't really where it's at, so she switched to plan B. She married a wealthy doctor and started having children and sat at home and ate bonbons and watched Oprah along with a lot of other sisters. And as a result, you know, but there's no coming back for the man who was denied a slot at Harvard Law School. He had to go to some lower school, like Vanderbilt, for example, and the guy that got shut out of Vanderbilt because he was pushed down to Vanderbilt went to Memphis State Law School and yada, yada, yada. And as a result, they have permanently diminished careers. I tell people that men and women in today's world in America have three choices. A woman can have a full-time, serious money-making occupation that's totally endorsed. She can, on the other hand, be a full-time homemaker and mother who doesn't make a red cent, and that's fully endorsed. And then there's a third option, which is to have a part-time job so she has an excuse for being half-assed at both. She has some little job down at the local gift store or something paying minimum wage, but that's an excuse for not keeping house and tending to the children like her mother and grandmother did, or the reason she's not making more money is because she's got these housekeeping duties as mother and nurturer of children and housekeeper, for example. So consequently, it's an excuse. But see, men, on the other hand, they have three choices in life today, too, in America. They can work full-time, they can work full-time, or they can work full-time. Any man that tells you that he is a house husband, I predict, will be divorced within 2 years because women, despite all of this feminist rhetoric about equality, they're not about to let men off the hook and have the same options that women have in life. And what happens is that a lot of women, as they get older, begin to realize that, you know, they're not really the beneficiaries, but their husbands are the victims of feminism, of preference for women, or even equal opportunities for women. And as a result, they don't get the promotions, they don't get the pay raises that their fathers and grandfathers did, and a lot of women are chapped about it, quite frankly. The women that are really benefiting from the feminist agenda are lesbians. There was an athletic director at the University of Memphis named Charles Cavanero. He went on to the University of Nevada at Las Vegas after he made these unfortunate comments that really caused a firestorm back in the 80s. He said that Title IX, which is basically feminist preference for women in college athletics, that it really should be renamed Spikes for Dykes. It was the Lesbian Full Employment Act, he said. And as a result, you know, you have all of these made-up sports that there's virtually no interest in. And who populates these teams at colleges? Disproportionately, lesbians. And then, in the business world, who are the ones who are the big beneficiaries, the ones that stay in these positions, that use that Harvard degree, that use that law degree and whatnot, or medical degree, and move on? You know, again, there are plenty of straight women that do this, but there are also lesbians. And for all the straight women that do, they tend to have smaller families. And we are always decrying the decline of white birth rates in America. And this is one of the reasons. Again, that's just one, you know, that's my take on feminism. It has unintended consequences that are irreversible, James.
Well, with that being said, Keith, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back with much, much more. That much, I guarantee you. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. All right, everybody, welcome back. You know, we opened up this show tonight talking about those things which now hang on our walls here at 1380. One thing we didn't mention: the very first article that was ever written about this show, you know, I used to collect them and, you know, snip them out of the paper and hang them up because, you know, it was a novelty when it first happened. And then after it became, you know, par for the course, it kind of lost its allure to an extent. I mean, we still get excited when we get publicity, but it's, you know, it's kind of old hat now. But the first article ever written about us appeared in 2005, 6 years ago. It was front page news in the Commercial Appeal, and it was entitled, "Why." The title of the article was "Wise Up or slip into the cesspool. And basically the article, I guess its basic argument is that if anyone listens to our show, they're very stupid. And if they want to become very smart, they need to change the dial. And a star was born, Keith, this political cesspool radio program. And it was written by Keith's favorite columnist, Wendy Thomas, who no doubt has been a beneficiary of that which you've been discussing, Keith, affirmative action and feminism.
Perfect example, a black woman, homegrown here in Memphis. She left Memphis because apparently she didn't think she was getting proper respect. She went to Baltimore, lasted about 2 weeks up there, realized what a sweet gig she had in Memphis, quit her job there, came back, begged her way back onto the newspaper. And I guarantee you that if the commercial appeal goes out of business, she will be the last person to lose her job. All the white liberals who supported her and the integration of the newsroom there have gone by the wayside for the most part. We're left with Otis Sanford, the black editor, and Wendy Thomas, the black featured weekly columnist. And, of course, they think that's entirely appropriate because we have now a majority black city here in Memphis. But Wendy, unfortunately, has a real talent deficit and has problems with the English language that she hasn't conquered yet. But this is, you know, this is what you expect. Now, let me get back to what we were talking about right before the break. Men are still considered or expected to be the primary breadwinners. If you don't believe that, go into divorce court someday and listen to the type of rulings they make. They're all based on the presumption that men and women are not equal, that men are expected to be the primary breadwinner, and that women now, there's a big movement for them to get alimony even when they have their own career and their own earnings. Even when there is no child support or children involved in the marriage, this is a new move because, after all, men are supposed to be the primary breadwinners. But in the real world, where most of us live, men now have a different world to live in than 1950. They have blacks who are not only competing with them, but are given preference over them. Hispanics not only competing with them, but given preference. And now women as well being given preference over them for promotions, for getting jobs, for getting appointments, for getting all the goodies in life. And what has happened because of that to men is that they're being crowded out, but the expectations are still back in 1950. As a friend of mine has said, women expect their husbands to be Ward Cleaver, but they have no intention of being June Cleaver in today's world. They're not going to do what June did, and we have a whole world of competition, but white men are supposed to magically rise to the top, even though legally they are the least advantaged group. They're the most disadvantaged group. For example, in the Code of Federal Regulations, there is a provision that provides racial and gender preferences for government contracts, federal government contracts, and federal government jobs. Number one, the person with the most preference over everybody is black female. Number 44, the person that has no preference over anybody is the person who's the low man on the totem pole, are white non-Hispanic males. So that's why I say that a lot of women need to wake up and realize that feminism is a blind alley and it's really going to have consequences deleterious to their lives in the real world, James.
Feminism, affirmative action, they're all born from fruit of the same poisonous tree. There you go. Thank you, Keith. Of course, Ann Coulter herself, you know, this neoconservative, she's right every now and then, you know, just she. And it's like, you know, our friend Bill, not Bill Rowland, but another Bill, ladies and gentlemen, that we know, he gives you the decon analogy and he says, you know, decon is, you know, 90% good stuff, you know, to attract the rad, you know, it's just that, you know, small percentage that kills you. And, you know, that's what Ann Coulter gives you. You know, people like this. They sprinkle in enough truth to make them attractive to people who should be, you know, gravitating towards our message, our, you know, unwatered down message. And, you know, Ann Coulter came out this week and said, you know, she is in favor of affirmative action. And this was actually sent in to me by a fan of the show and out of Texas, Gerald, a great guy. And he wrote an article and said that he heard Ann Coulter on the radio recently promoting her new book, which is entitled Demonic. And at some point during the interview, she began ranting about the evil Democrats and was coming out in favor of affirmative action, saying that it was the Democrats and, of course, you know, Southern white Democrats like, you know, George Wallace, people like that, that were really the ones who were blocking civil rights, and that the true champions of civil rights have always been Republicans, and she's always been in favor of affirmative action. And, you know, again, ladies and gentlemen, you can't be for affirmative action or be against affirmative action or be against feminism and be for, you're either for it all or you must be against it all. There is no middle ground when it comes to these egalitarian movements. And we're going to segue into an excellent column that Pat Buchanan has written about called The Death of a Moral Community. But first, this thing about affirmative action, Keith has followed the breadcrumb trail and given you a chronological order of how the egalitarian movements have progressed. But I'm sure Keith and Coulter's probably, I guess, cheering the recent court decision up in Michigan. Tell them about that.
Well, look, Ann Coulter is a perfect example of the fact that you can't have it both ways. You make yourself a fool if you try to embrace part of liberalism and denounce other parts of it. And I don't care whether the part you want to embrace is feminism, the civil rights movement, environmentalism, take your pick. You know, environmentalism is plants and animals are the same as or just as good as human beings. Gay rights is homosexuals are the same as or just as good as straight people. And these leftists mean it. And when people choke on this and say they've gone too far, they might feel they wind up discovering they've been made fools of. For example, William Douglas, who was an associate justice in the Warren Court, one of these big liberals from up in the Pacific Northwest, he was alarmed when the Supreme Court decided to that it should rule that busing was required in public schools in order to achieve racial balance. He thought this was a bridge too far. When he announced his position to just a fellow associate justice, Thurgood Marshall, a black man who had been one of the primary spokesmen for the NAACP in the Brown decision back in 1954, and as a reward got elevated to the Supreme Court, laughed in his face. He said, "You guys have been discriminating for a long time. Now it's our turn." In other words, all of these liberals that thought that when the civil rights movement occurred, we were going to move from this benighted time of discrimination to a time of non-discrimination were fooling themselves, only fooling themselves. What actually happened is we replaced one type of discrimination, anti-black discrimination, with another type, anti-white. And anti-white discrimination is a real juggernaut now. It is not challenged at all. It's going on full steam ahead. And as the white population continues to diminish to the point that in the year 2042 is the year now projected by the UN, whites will be a minority in America. There will be no minority rights. There will be no rights for the minority at that time, which will be white people. It's going to be anti-white with a vengeance unless we develop the sense of racial solidarity that every other race has. See, this is what happens. Ann Coulter is a perfect example of what feminism does to women. She could have been a mother, had exemplary children, had a happy marriage. Instead, she's exchanged all that for a mess of pottage to be the witch queen of mainstream conservatism. She absolutely, you know, she's linking up with liberal lunatics like Keith Olbermann. In her life, she's a blue state conservative, which means she's really not a conservative at all. Her enmity towards true, authentic red state conservatives has been demonstrated on numerous opinions.
She votes for Bush.
Yeah, she thinks that Bush is a hardcore conservative, and of course he's a down east Yankee from Sissybunkport, Maine, along with his daddy, who came to Texas the same way a Chinaman came to America in the 19th century to make a hat full and go home. But of course, they don't want you knowing that, folks. They want you to understand that somehow they are the true spokesman of conservatism. You'll only be confused if you think that.
We got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back.
The political cesspool guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, first hour of the political cesspool, about to wrap up. Got one more segment here, then we're going to be moving on to the rest of the program. Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute and AlternativeRight.com will be our guest at the top of the second hour in just a few minutes. And then later on tonight, Eddie the Bombardier Miller and I will be covering a litany of news of interest to you. But first, our good friend Pat Buchanan. Keep in mind, you can listen to some of Pat's exclusive interviews with us here on the Political Cesspool by going to our archives at our official website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. 98% of the content featured at thepoliticalcesspool.org is originally written stuff, us commenting on news stories, columns by myself and Winston Smith. Every now and then, Pat will write an article so good that we just hijack it and put it up, and give him the credit, of course, put it up on our website. We don't really, we don't fill a lot of our content with other people's material. We keep it all in-house, but sometimes, Pat, you know, we just got to get his stuff up there. And he wrote a great article that has the left howling for blood even more than they usually do. The Southern Poverty Law Center wrote an article about Pat's latest column entitled "No More Mr. Nice Guy, Patrick Buchanan and the Virtue of Prejudice." Pat's latest column is "Death of a Moral Community," and I'll just read the opening paragraph and then turn it over to Keith for some commentary. He's talking about the abominable vote in New York to legalize so-called homosexual marriage. And this is what Pat writes. "The opponents of same-sex marriage have no case other than ignorance and misconception and prejudice." That's what Richard Cohen wrote in his celebratory column about Governor Andrew Cuomo's role in legalizing gay marriage in New York State. Pat continues, "Now, given that no nation in 20 centuries of Christendom legalized homosexual marriage, and in this century, majorities in all 31 states where it's been on the ballot have rejected it," Cohen is pretty much saying that since the time of Christ, Western history has been an endless dark age dominated by moral ignoramuses and bigots. It only gets better from there, ladies and gentlemen, and to read it for yourself, you have to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. One of these days, Keith's going to understand that we have two computers here in the studio, and he always picks the wrong mouse when he's trying to do his work. But Keith, anyway, pick up where I'm leaving off here about Pat's excellent column.
Well, Pat didn't even hit that hard enough. It's not just Christendom where there's been no nation that has legalized homosexual marriage and, from time immemorial. Name the Islamic nation that's done that, for example, the Hindu nation, the Buddhist nation, Zoroastrian nation, yada, yada, yada. Israel, of course, doesn't do that either. Of course, they always have taken the position, don't do as we say. of course, you know, and that shows you how duplicitous and how insincere they are in prescribing their liberal nostrums to America and the rest of Western Europe. They never have, for example, open borders. They have the most closed border of any nation in the world. They've built a wall that would put the Great Wall of China to shame between themselves and the Palestinians in the West Bank. But they, with straight faces, urge open borders on us, and when we point out this type of inconsistency, they just shrug their shoulders. Of course, you know, we're not to be held accountable. We're Jews. Crazy stuff, but nonetheless, that's the way it is. In fact, we got a comment. The thing about gay marriage is that it is contrary to human nature. Every major religion doesn't just, you know, condemn it. It condemns it roundly. For example, in the Bible, it's not only a sin, but it's an abomination, designated an abomination, which means, I guess, in today's modern parlance, it's a supersized sin, more above and beyond a mere sin. Now, here is a typical liberal take represented by a comment by a commenter on our blog named Pittsburgher. Wow, lots of generalizations going on here. Ever had a meaningful conversation with any Jewish people or any gay people for that matter? Thankfully, I have friends who are gays, Jews, blacks, etc. Anyway, the only gay agenda is for gays to have to be not treated as second-class citizens, that they can be proud of who they are like everyone else.
Like white people?
A certain percentage of the population has always been gay, and in the future a certain percentage will be gay. No promotion will make it more prevalent, just as no punishments will make it less prevalent. Michelangelo was gay. Tchaikovsky was gay. Blah, 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 and all this type of stuff. They had to hide their secret for fear of persecution. Alexander the Great was bisexual, but lived before the insanity of Christianity took over the West. Okay, where to begin with this comment? First of all, I think the key to it is that gays don't proselytize. They don't try to bring people in. You're born gay. And of course, if you're born gay, then it has to be all right because, as liberals are fond of telling us, God don't make no junk. So now see, the fact that the Bible, the Quran, the Holy Writ of virtually every religion says that it's a sin doesn't seem to affect these people. Of course, their true religion is not Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, or any of that. It's liberalism. Liberalism is the great alternative faith and the great challenger and enemy of Christianity in the modern West today, much more so than Islam or even Judaism, okay? Liberalism is a secular faith. It has its own canons and whatnot, and this guy is right on, you know, he's an apostle for the religion of liberalism. Now, of course, gays try to proselytize. They try to bring people over, and they're able to do that now. Why in the world do you think they were so interested in becoming Boy Scout leaders? Hello, Pittsburgher. You know, remember when that happened? They know that pubescent preteens are in a very fluid state, and they're very vulnerable. As I told James, remember how good it felt when you first had sex. Now, imagine if you had that feeling when you had sex with a person of the same sex. That's where the gender confusion comes in. That's why they're so, you know, they're not interested in infiltrating AARP, James. They know that those people, are old folks' homes. They're not interested in trying to convert those people. They're interested in getting people in this vulnerable window of opportunity. So, you know, Pittsburgher is all wet on that. If they weren't so intent upon getting into youth groups, teaching in things like the Boy Scouts, then you might have a point, but you don't have a point. Now, there have always been some people that were gay. On the other hand, society is much better off when gayness is not equated with heterosexuality. Homosexuality and heterosexuality are not, you know, two sides of the same coin, all meat and no potatoes, don't knock it till you tried it. We hear all that type of stuff from the gay left. In fact, gayness or homosexuality used to be a matter to be ashamed of, like any other sin, like murder, like theft, things like this.
It used to rightly be categorized as a mental illness.
It used to be rightly categorized as at least a neurosis or a mental illness by the American Psychiatric Association until the gay lobby and the left lobbied and pressured them out of that position. Now, I guess we're on the way to heterosexuality being declared a neurosis or a mental illness. It's just crazy what is going on in the world today. You know, in fact, you're now supposed to be proud of being a homosexual, gay pride. Now, I don't know a lot of liberals, and I do know liberals, and I do know blacks, and I do know Jews, Mr. Pittsburgher or Miss Pittsburgher or a person of indeterminate gender Pittsburgher, whoever you are. And I don't know of any liberals who are proud to announce that one of their children has turned out to be gay. Quite frankly, this is where the great disconnect comes in. People that try to pretend that a sin is a virtue run into these type of inconsistencies. Their own gut tells them it's wrong, but they somehow continue to repeat the same old talking points. They just can't come to terms with the nonsense that is liberalism.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, all of the topics that we bring to your attention on our weekly program here on Saturday nights, We're talking about all that and more each day on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And I'll tell you, the real party happens in the comment sections. It's really taken off here in recent months. And if you want to join our discussion and debate, if you want to spar with some of our liberal detractors, or just share a conversation with others who you find yourself in agreement with, it's all taking place at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go to the comment section, you know, read your favorite article, and leave your opinion there on the matter. We're coming up to the end of this first hour. I'll let you go take a look at it right now, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And then when we come back, we'll be joined by my good friend Richard Spencer. He's going to be talking about the National Policy Institute Conference. Coming up September 9th through the 11th in Washington, D.C., I will be there and I will be speaking at the National Press Club, the holy of holies, the National Press Club. You're not going to want to miss hearing about all of this. And we're going to give you all the details right after this.
Two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk. In the First Baptist Church, in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the Amen.